Let's find out what it says in today's papers. Here's John S. Kelly.
The European Union still has its eye on Ireland, to judge from two stories on the Irish Times front page. The paper leads with a report that senior European officials have raised concerns about the potential for Ireland's new water regime to jeopardise the government's fiscal planning. And the Irish Independent, in its lead story, likewise has EU officials warning that the new water charges plan puts the country at risk of missing the Troika's budget target next year and plunging the country into another round of cuts and tax increases. In another EU connection, the Times reports that the Council of Europe is to publish today a wide-ranging review of Ireland's parliamentary, judicial and prosecution system. The Council, based in Strasbourg, notes that there is growing concern about corruption in Ireland, despite recent reforms such as the Freedom of Information Act and Ethics Acts. Water charge outrage, meanwhile, is one headline over the Irish Daily Mirror's lead story. Blackmail is another. The paper reports that it has emerged that council tenants could be kicked out of their homes if they refuse to pay water charges. Richard Boyd Barrett, the People Before Profit TD, is quoted as saying it is a scandal, an utter scandal. However, the Irish Examiner reports in its lead story the pledge by John Tierney, head of Irish Water, that people who fail to pay their household water bills will not be pursued in the courts, which prompts a certain amount of indignation from the Irish Daily Mail. On its front page, the paper says Irish Water won't pursue debts in court, landlords say the deposit proposal won't work, and councils may refuse to pursue tenants. Will non-payers get off scot-free? Asks the headline in large capital letters. The Mail agrees with the Minister for the Environment, Alan Kelly, that Ireland will now have the lowest water charges in Europe. In Britain, France and Finland, says the paper, families are paying more than four times as much on average. In a column in The Times, Arthur Beasley writes about what he calls water charge hysteria. Some campaigners seem determined still to cast the whole thing as some kind of a national emergency, he says, and this is simply ridiculous. The water charge, says Beasley, is not particularly large. People who cannot pay it won't. No one will go to prison. Yet, as politicians shriek and bray on the airwaves, some would have you believe that the end of the world has come. The Irish Daily Star and Irish Sun go with domestic matters for their lead stories. Brian O'Driscoll and Amy Huberman celebrating the birth of their second child, Billy. Son of Bod is the generally agreed headline all round, and for good measure in the Star and Mirror, The Bod Father Part 2. Barack Obama's unveiling of new measures on immigration is given prominence in The Times and Independent. His executive action will allow millions of illegal immigrants, including thousands of Irish, to live and work in the United States without the risk of being deported, says The Times. There are two fine front page photographs of birds. The Times picture by Cyril Byrne shows gulls in Dunleary perched on a lamp as the sun rises in the fog. There's a foggy look also about Mark Steadman's photograph for The Examiner. It's of Jerry McAvoy with some of his 1,000 turkeys as he prepares them for Christmas. We're not told where the farm is, but one bird is flying in the air as the farmer looks up, and the headline to the photograph speaks of turkey delight. That can't be right.
John, thank you. 11 minutes past. And Conor Brophy's here with the early business news. Morning, Conor.
Morning, Gavin. The online gaming and technology company Xanadu is expanding its operations in Cork, as you heard in the news headlines, and will hire 120 new staff over the next year. Xanadu provides a number of services to the online sports trading market. Matchbook.com, one of the world's leading betting exchanges, is among its clients. Xanadu helps handle the massive amounts of data created by these businesses, enhancing their ability to identify patterns and analyse consumer trends. And we'll hear from the company's chief executive, Mark Brosnan, at 10 to 8. Bewley's profit is up 43% over the past year, according to accounts published by the company and reported in this morning's Irish Times. Bewley's revenue was up 6.6% to €104 million, and profit was up 43% to €2.2 million. That was driven by strong performance in the UK, where Bewley's acquired a business called Bolling Coffee in March of last year. In its home market, sales were up 3.3%, but the company is still dealing with the fallout from a Supreme Court judgment that overturned a ruling that would have seen rent fall substantially at Bewley's flagship Grafton Street Cafe in Dublin. Three quarters of employers plan to hire new staff in the coming year, but over half of employees plan to move job, according to an annual recruitment trend survey by Hays. The poll of almost 3,000 employers and employees suggests 58% of workers will be looking for a new position in 2015. Expectations are rising of pay and bonuses too, with over half the employees surveyed saying they expect a better pay packet next year and 48% saying they expect a bonus. SiteServe, the company which installs meters for Irish Water, reported a pre-tax profit of just under €7 million for the 8 months to the end of 2013, according to newly filed accounts. SiteServe is owned by the businessman Dennis O'Brien. It provides a range of services to utility companies and event organisers, including Irish Water, UPC, the Glastonbury Music Festival and the Giro d'Italia cycle race. The accounts say revenue is up about 23% over the past 2 years on an underlying basis, according to its unaudited results. In currencies, the euro buys $1 25.5 this morning and 80 pence sterling.
Connor, thank you for that. In a moment, the lives of 5 million illegal immigrants in the United States could change under plans unveiled by Barack Obama overnight. From the White House, the president outlined the executive action which he plans to take. We'll be hearing from our Washington correspondent, Katrina Purry, in a moment, and also from the Foreign Affairs Minister, Charlie Flanagan. But first, let's hear what President Obama had to say.
Now, here's the thing. We expect people who live in this country to play by the rules. We expect that those who cut the line will not be unfairly rewarded. So we're going to offer the following deal. If you've been in America for more than 5 years, if you have children who are American citizens or legal residents, if you register, pass a criminal background check, and you're willing to pay your fair share of taxes, you'll be able to apply to stay in this country temporarily without fear of deportation. You can come out of the shadows and get right with the law. That's what this deal is. Now, let's be clear about what it isn't. This deal does not apply to anyone who has come to this country recently. It does not apply to anyone who might come to America illegally in the future. It does not grant citizenship or the right to stay here permanently, or offer the same benefits that citizens receive. Only Congress can do that. All we're saying is we're not going to deport you.
That's President Barack Obama speaking from the White House in the early hours of this morning. Well, RT's correspondent Katrina Purry is in New York. I've been asking her to outline the main aspects of what the president had to announce.
Obama's plans fell into three main strands as such. The first one is looking at deferred action for people, protection from deportation. The main bulk of people there that will be helped are those who have been in the US illegally for at least 5 years, who have children who are either US citizens or legal residents, who pass a criminal background check and who pay their taxes and have everything up to order in that regard. They'll also be allowed to apply for a work permit. There'll be an extension of deferred action as well for children who travelled here illegally, born since 1981 and arrived in the US before 2010. They'll also be given a protection from deportation. Now, both of those last for only 3 years. And according to Obama's plans, that will be renewable after that. But of course, that depends who's president at the time, whether these actions are reversed and whether Congress does anything in the meantime. There've also been proposed changes to how immigration charges are enforced. And Obama has said he's instructed the officials and the various authorities and agencies to deal with this, to instead of deporting someone who's been arrested for a very minor offence and just arrested, not charged for something like smashed taillight on their car, littering, chewing gum or throwing gum on the street, they no longer will be ready for deportation. You'll only be allowed to be deported now if you've been convicted of a serious crime.
So what's the difference? What change will this make to the lives of people who are in the United States illegally? In particular, of course, many people will be thinking of Irish citizens and of those families you spoke to on the programme from South America yesterday.
Absolutely. For families who have children, and particularly those who've made, I suppose, harrowing journeys from Central and South America and paid over a lot of money to do that, they will be able to register now to stay, to have a waiver from deportation. They'll be allowed to have work permits and, crucially, to get better jobs than the ones they have at the moment when they're open to exploitation. They're sometimes employed just on a day-to-day basis and they don't get paid. And they do the jobs that many Americans say they themselves aren't prepared to do. So that definitely is good news for them. The key point is that really it's only going to help people who have children. And many organisations organisations representing immigrants, particularly in the Irish community, have pointed out the unfairness of this. It's discriminatory against those who don't have children. There's nothing in this for them at all. The other point to note is you have to register and come forward and admit that you are illegal and that you have been illegal for at least 5 years. Your name then will go on a list and your background is logged. Mm. And who knows what will happen in 3 years' time. Essentially, you could be setting yourself up for deportation at that point. So it's going to be very important for people to get the full facts of this and also to get independent advice on it.
Given that reality, how have these various measures gone down with the various groups representing people who are undocumented?
Well, one key point that people have pointed to, which was referred to by senior administration officials yesterday and in Barack Obama's speech last night, and we'll get more details on it today, is this issue of being allowed to leave the country and come back again. Currently, if you do that and you've been illegal in the US for less than a year, you're banned from re-entry for 3 years. If you've been illegal for more than 1 year, you're banned for 10 years. And there were references made yesterday that this will be relaxed, that there will be a better application of people who have personal hardships, that they will be allowed to return to their country of origin for things like funerals, very sick relatives, that sort of thing, but they will have to get advance permission to do so. So that obviously has been welcomed, but this disparity between people with and without children is a key point, and particularly in the south and southwest of America, where farm labourers is a key point, and the people there tend to be young single males aged under 25 who don't have children here but who have been in the US for quite a long time and pick fruit and vegetables for very low wages. There's no protections in this for them.
Katrina, this is of course Barack Obama's policy. It's a Democratic policy. What are the Republicans saying about it?
Well, they have well signalled that they weren't happy about him taking these actions, and now that he has announced them, they're even less happy. Speaker of the House John Boehner has hired a third lawyer to try and sue Barack Obama for acting outside of his powers. And in fact, some Democrats have also said that they're not happy about what Barack Obama has done. The White House has said they're absolutely sure that he does have constitutional authority to take these actions. Members of the Republican Party, and like I say, some Democrats are saying that actually he doesn't. Everyone is in agreement that the immigration system needs to be reformed. The point is how to do it. And Barack Obama himself said yesterday he still would favour legislation coming through Congress, but there's no sign of that happening. There's no sign of the Republican Party tabling anything when the new Congress sits in January.
That's RTE's Washington correspondent, Katrina Perry.
The Minister for Foreign Affairs is on the phone. Good morning, Charlie Flanagan.
Does
what Barack Obama announced last night mean that illegal Irish immigrants in the United States will be allowed to come home to visit and then return to their lives in America?
Well, this is welcome news. The overall package has got to be seen to be positive progress. Not everybody will be satisfied, but thousands will. And I think if you look at it in the overall context, as Katrina Perry has said, there are a number of 11 million undocumented illegal immigrants in the United States. Of those, about 4 million will benefit in some way from this new initiative. From an Irish perspective, there are up to 50,000 undocumented. The figures are not clear because of the fact that they are undocumented, unregistered. But it's estimated that many thousands will benefit. You mentioned specifically the area of travel. This indeed has been a big issue because we've heard, everybody has heard over the years, indeed myself as a constituency TD, the distressing and agonising and disturbing cases of people unable to travel, unable to come home.
Does that change now, Charlie Flanagan? Will they be able to come home?
Yes. The President didn't announce the small print or the detail as far as the travel is concerned, but there is reference to it, and I believe that there is hope there for many thousands.
Hope or certainty?
Undocumented Irish, yeah, who haven't been able. Yes, I believe that that hope will actually transform into real progress. I will be listening closely to Las Vegas later on this morning when the President will elaborate further. But it is clear from what has been said that the travel issue will be addressed and will allow for many Irish to travel in a manner in which they haven't over the years, to attend funerals, to attend weddings, to come home, where there's a real humanitarian need.
You tweeted last night at around 10 o'clock, "I'm very pleased that Enda Kenny has called President Obama in advance of immigration reform package a big issue for Irish in America." The tweet was deleted, and at 10:40 you tweeted, "Strong and welcome announcement on immigration reform by President Obama at 1 a.m. Why was the tweet deleted?
Enda Kenny has been actively engaged in this issue. He spoke to President Obama recently. He didn't speak to him yesterday.
Okay.
Our ambassador, Anne Anderson, has been really active in this regard. Pat Breen, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, Jimmy Dinahan, Minister of State, has been in the States recently. I myself was in Washington in September when I had the opportunity of engaging directly with Vice President Joe Biden.
But he didn't speak to him
Secretary
yesterday,
State, no. John Kerry, all of whom are anxious to help the extraordinary situation for the thousands of undocumented Irish. And I'm satisfied that the positive progress that has been made in this regard will offer an opportunity for people who have been living a lie in the United States with no identity, oftentimes finding it extremely difficult to make physical contact with their loved ones at home. That will be settled, and I believe it's real progress.
And we'll be talking to two of those illegal Irish immigrants who have a mixed, somewhat welcoming reaction to President Obama's speech a little later in the programme. Back home, Charlie Flanagan, you're still asking people to pay for water, less than you were asking 3 weeks ago. Lots of people still saying they won't pay, lots of people protesting. Here's what your fellow Fine Gael TD Noel Coonan had to say about some of those protests in the Dáil yesterday.
The people who are protesting here in Dublin, the socialist led group, they don't care about the country people. And they want to act like parasites and live off of the country people. They have never acknowledged the role that the people down the country, small business people who operate from their own home, who have to pay for their water. And I think that it has been an awakening call for them, because they are now concerned about elements of socialists. And I think that that needs to be nipped in the bud. If not, we're facing what is potentially an ISIS situation in the Middle East, if those people are allowed to get on to do what they're doing.
ISIS, do you agree?
Well, this is a very passionate contribution from my friend and colleague Deputy Noel Coonan in an adjoining constituency of Tipperary here beside me in Laois. He did use strong and colourful language.
I wouldn't
necessarily agree with all of which he had to say, but I am satisfied, Gavin, that we have made changes to the water charges package, which are affordable and simple and clear, and people sought clarity and people sought certainty, and we've provided that.
Not much more exaggerated than Enda Kenny, who's hardly a backbencher, claiming a claim earlier on during the week of protesters kidnapping the Taoiseach. If you want protesters to calm down, if you want this to be nipped in the bud, shouldn't your fellow TDs be setting an example and tone down the language?
As I said to you, Gavin, this in many respects is a subjective analysis, toning down language. We've gone through a very difficult period. Of course people are entitled to protest, and in any democracy that is and should be the case. However, I think it's clear in recent times that there were certain elements that went over the top, but now we move forward, we have the package, and I think it's important that we engage with people in a way that's positive, and that people now have the clarity and the certainty, and we move on.
Still no guarantee the EU will approve of your plan. What if they don't?
I believe the overall assessment by the Troika is expected to be positive.
I know you expect that and you hope that, but what will you do if they don't approve it?
I expect, Gavin, and I hope, because we haven't reached a conclusion on this issue as yet, there's speculation further in this morning's newspaper. My expectation is that the overall assessment...
What if they don't?
And the indications are, well, we'll engage with them in a way that will ensure that they will.
Do you have a plan for what would happen if they don't?
If the Troika have issues, and I understand they're in town today, we have absolutely no difficulty in sitting down with them, talking through this issue,
do you have
working
a plan
on it, so as to ensure... Yes, the government has a plan, and that plan is that which was debated in the Dáil yesterday, voted in the Dáil last night.
Yes, but if the EU don't approve that, do you have a plan for what you will do if they don't approve that?
Well, I'm not going to go into the ifs and buts.
I'm not asking you for the plan, I'm asking you if you have one.
No, what I'm saying is that we will deal with the Troika in the very successful manner in which we have, ultimately leading to the exit of the bailout last December. If the Troika have any further issues, Michael Noonan and our government team have no difficulty engaging with them in the manner in which we have over recent years. Because the object of the exercise is clear here, Gavin, that we can ensure that the country never returns to the gross mismanagement and economic crisis of the past number of years. We're making recovery. It's slow. People have been asked to make huge sacrifices.
And they've been asked to make another one,
and ultimately, our positive economic growth is giving rise to jobs. That's the object of the exercise.
Charlie Flanagan, Minister for Foreign Affairs, thank you very much for speaking to us on the programme. As I said, we'll hear from two illegal Irish immigrants in the United States later in the programme.
Morning to you, Fran. How are you? Good news of Katie Taylor. She is through to the semi-final of the World Boxing Championship in Korea. Bit of an anti-climax, though. Her opponent, Sofia Ochagava of Russia, the woman she beat in the Olympic final, withdrew from her bout in advance with a knee injury. So Katie went through straight away on a walkover. Now, on one level, it's a bit disappointing that she didn't have to fight, but the good news is, A, she's guaranteed a bronze medal because she's in the semi-final, and B, the fact that she has been spared what would have been a very tough fight ahead of the semi-final.
I think she was relishing it a bit as well.
She was relishing it. But she can relish Sunday's semi-final now because she's up against a Chinese woman, Jinhua Yin, on Sunday for a place in the final. But she's guaranteed bronze now after a walkover in the semi-final this morning. Now, good news, two of our golfers, Ireland's Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy, still share the lead at the end of season European Tour Championship in Dubai. Play has been underway for a few hours now. The second round, the final group out are the two Irishmen. They tee off in about an hour's time, at 20 to 9 hour time, and they're tied on 6 under par. They've just been joined at the top of the leaderboard by Spain's Rafa Cabrera Bello. He's having an extraordinary round. He began way down the field on 1 over par, but he's birdied 7 of the opening 10 holes, and he's moved to 6 under with Lowry and McIlroy. Graham McDowell is on 1 under after 8 holes. Michael Hoey is 4 over for his first 9 today and 5 over for the tournament. Meanwhile, bad luck yesterday for Peter Lawrie at the European Tour qualifying school. He missed out on a card for the right to play next year by one shot. He finished in a tie for 28th place, and only the top 25 in ties made it. Now, tomorrow's big rugby international between Ireland and Australia dominates the sporting weekend. We'll look ahead to that in a moment, but three of the Irish provinces are in Pro 12 action tonight, and the big talking point is the appearance of former All Black legend Mills Mullaina for Connacht. They play Zebra at the sports ground, and the Kiwi says he's really excited at the prospect after being on the sidelines for 4 months following elbow surgery. In the other games tonight, Munster are away to the Dragons, Ulster host Ospreys. So let's turn our attention to the Ireland-Australia game then. And first we'll hear from the Australia coach Michael Checa, who has been talking up the Irish challenge.
Ireland's a real force in world rugby. There's no doubt about it. Like, you don't win Six Nations last time. It's not that long before they won a Grand Slam before that. They've excelled against the Northern Hemisphere teams over many years, whether it be Triple Crowns or Six Nations Championships. And it's only a matter of time, as it's been shown, playing together, great crop of players, excellent coach who's been able to unite them probably better than any of the other coaches in the past. And their results are going to be improved, no doubt. So they're a quality team, and they're a real team to be reckoned with now and definitely in the World Cup, without a doubt.
Now, for an Irish perspective, Damien O'Mara has been talking to Ireland winger Simon Zeebo about the challenge they face, and Zeebo says these are the kind of games they want to play in.
As a player, you want to play against the best players in the world and test yourself and see where you're at, and this is definitely another opportunity for us to test ourselves against the best, and we can't let you know, the South Africa game be a once-off. We want to be competing with the best sides in the world, and we want to at the end of the day, push for silverware with Ireland. So, it's a massive game for us, and it's one of the best ties in the world. So,
yeah, and I was going to say as well, you talk about the wins over the last two weekends. They've both been wins that have been achieved. Well, you've all been very honest that there's much more in the tank, that they have been far from perfect Irish performances, or maybe far from the level that you guys want to be at week in, week out.
Yeah, I suppose, but having said that, we hadn't played together in a long time, so Yeah, it was just we're happy we got the wins, but the main thing is going into this weekend is getting our performance right from the get-go, really, because if we slack off at all at the start, we're going to be punished because they're such a world-class outfit. So we just have to concentrate on our performance from minute one.
And I suppose the reminder is only to have to watch the DVD of the last time the sides met at the Aviva Stadium, that if you make even like the slightest of a mistake or one lapse in concentration, these top nation teams will destroy you or will take the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything down to the smallest details, even passing. One pass goes behind or bounces, hits the floor, they could go up 80 metres for a try. We've seen Folau pick up intercepts against Wales and these things, and the Baba. So, you know, we just have to be unbelievably accurate in everything we do, and hopefully try and nullify as much of their attack as possible.
How important is it to do a clean sweep and to use a really successful November series as a springboard for the Six Nations?
I think it's important, but it's not really the main goal, to be honest. I think just nailing down our performance, because if we go into games thinking about winning a clean sweep or thinking about the next step, we'll miss the moment that's right in front of us. And Australia are coming, and they're not going to take time to settle into the game. They're going to go straight away, boom, coming at us. So we have to be ready and focusing on our performance from minute one, and hopefully get on the right end of the scoreboard.
That's Simon Zeebo. We've live coverage of that match, of course, on RT Television and Saturday Sport Radio tomorrow. Ireland's Gaelic footballers also take on the Aussies tomorrow. That's in the International Rules Test in Perth.
One test this time round.
Just one test, yeah. And the future of it is really in doubt. They're meeting on Sunday morning to decide where it goes next. Many tributes paid in this morning's newspapers to 9-time All-Ireland winner with Kilkenny, Tommy Walsh, who announced his retirement from intercounty hurling. Only 31, extraordinary amount of success for him. In racing, Home Farm is being aimed at the Lexus Chase over Christmas after winning impressively at Thurles for David Casey and Henry de Bromhead. And today's racing action is in Dundalk. The first race is at 5:40.
Des, thank you. 7:40. This week we've been hearing concerns over funding for mental health services in primary and post-primary schools, and we'll be putting those to Education Minister Jan O'Sullivan later in the programme. In the last of her series of reports this week, Jackie Fox examines the support systems in place for students at third level who are experiencing emotional distress. Jackie went to Cork Institute of Technology and NUI Galway.
I started to break down, like, you know what I mean? There was moments that I got really low, like, you know what I mean? I didn't get as low as going in it, but, you know what I mean? I was fairly damn close at some occasions.
Second-year CIT student Peter Glavin suffers from depression and is one of the students who benefits from the mental health services in CIT.
I just had to do something. I had to get over the spiral that I was in. Like, it's a struggle sometimes, you know, in college, try to get all the college work and try to deal with home life. It's a struggle, and it's great to have an outlet that you can go to and you can have a meeting and talk to an impartial person than just, you know, struggling and struggling and struggling. And I'm sure there is people after falling out of college that didn't realise that there's help here for them and didn't know where to go for it or just didn't want to ask for it. You know, the counsellors here are absolutely brilliant. And I probably wouldn't still be in second year if I didn't have to talk to a counsellor here. Just put it that way, you know.
In here. If you were getting this framed and put up downstairs.
Kira O'Connor, Students' Union Welfare Officer at Cork Institute of Technology, preparing the college's amber flag for display. The charity Suicide Aware awards the flag to groups that bring a culture change in the promotion of positive mental health, helping people like Peter. CIT was one of the first organisations in Ireland to be awarded the flag last year. Kira was also welfare officer during this time.
Throughout the year, we work with various organisations, and especially through social media. We find the subtle things, just the things that really, really help. It doesn't need to be a big campaign, because a lot of people will go online to look for help. You do need to be careful about what our campaigns you run as well, that it's not really upsetting anyone, or it's not, I suppose, creating any negative thoughts or anything like that.
Okay, so in 3 weeks' time, we have Pause and Mind Body Week coming up again.
Preparations are now underway to keep CIT's amber status.
Stands in again from the various organisations in the city and outside there. So I suppose
mental health is so important, and there is a lot of work going on at the moment, but I think we need to keep doing more. I mean, we see so many deaths by suicide every year, nearly more than road deaths, and there's so much more money and effort put into road safety. So My main thing about it is if these campaigns reach out to at least one person and that one person knows where the services are, who they can go talk to, that's a huge achievement, I think.
Hi guys, come here. What we have here is a big long roll of fabric and we're getting everyone to sign like their little motivational quotes and messages of
positive. NUI Galway is now looking for the flag and campaigns are ongoing.
Alright, you're not alone. It's a quote Martin's always uses just to remind people that people in depression, they tend to isolate themselves. Honestly, if there's one message you can say to someone, is just, if you need help, just ask a friend.
Here I'm writing, love the fool in you. Because everybody, you know, everybody's a fool sometimes, and some people are embarrassed to be a fool, and there's just nothing wrong with it.
I'm going to write the final two lines from this poem. The lines in Turkish are, "Bahar şiirlendiğin kadar bilirsin, bunu da öğren, sevdiğin kadar sevilirsin." And in English that means, no matter what you learn, learn this as well. You're loved as much as you love.
As those students are willing to discuss mental health issues, the Union of Students in Ireland is concerned for mental health services available in third level, with some students facing a 6-week wait to see a counsellor. Voluntary initiatives are now popping up to help students cope with difficulties. NUIG SU Welfare Officer is Aoife Houlihan.
The thing is, it's access. It really does come down to access. So it's access to the basic service that we have here, the health unit we have next door here, or counselling services. Sometimes during high stress times, the peak times would be around exam times, they would get slightly backed up in our counselling services as well. So the thing is, it is the last minute that someone will go and seek help if they do. So it's well and good for us to be going around trying to raise awareness, say, look, if you need to talk, make sure you ask for help. But then when they go and ask for help, that help is actually available to them.
Aoife Houlihan at NUI Galway, ending that report by Jackie Fox. If you'd like to talk to someone, the Samaritans are available on 116 123 Pieta House on 01 601 000, and Aware at 1890 303 302. We'll be talking to Education Minister John O'Sullivan later in the programme.
A piece of history made famous in a 1936 poem, which was studied by generations of Leaving Certificate students, is up for sale. Billy Brennan's barn, along with 3 acres of land in a derelict farmhouse, is up for sale in the heart of Patrick Kavanagh country. From Inniskeen in County Monaghan, Conor McMorrow reports.
The bicycles go by in twos and threes. There's a dance in Billy Brennan's barn tonight.
That's Art Agnew of the Patrick Kavanagh Centre. There hasn't been a dance there for decades, but Inniskeen Road July evening is familiar to hundreds of thousands from the Leaving Cert poetry book soundings.
There's not a child that has done the Leaving Cert that hasn't come across Billy Brennan's barn. I mean, as plenty of people from this part of the country would tell you, if you go on your holidays anywhere and somebody says, where are you from? They say you're from Monaghan. Well, they say, oh, stony grey soil of Monaghan. And then the next thing they'll say to you is, aye, there's a dance in Billy Brennan's barn tonight. It's universally known.
Universally known and locally cherished. Some local octogenarians remember dances in the loft of Brennan's barn over 70 years ago. People like 89-year-old Thomas McHugh.
Well, the last dance I was at was in the late 1940s. I'd say there'd be maybe 60, 80 people maybe on the loft. And they'd all be invited to it. There'd be all, it was tea made in the house here. And everybody during the night would get in and have a cup of tea, and it was mostly bread and jam. There'd either be a quarter ball or a half ball, a porter. So everybody would get so many mugs of that during the night. The dance would go on until, oh, maybe 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
And there's the half-talk code of mysteries and the wink and elbow language of delight.
To borrow from Kavanagh, there's a certain half-talk code and wink and elbow language associated with the sale of property. So has there been much interest in this particular sale? Dara O'Rourke is the auctioneer selling the famous barn.
Good interest in it at the moment. There's both interest nationally and locally in the property. And we expect it to be bought probably with somebody with a bit of connection to Kavanagh, or maybe somebody just looking to renovate a property close to the village. We had a couple of bids, just maybe not quite the right one just yet, but we hope to seal it off in the not too distant future.
He felt at this stage that poetry was his life, and that going to the dance in Billy Brennan's barn, that he wasn't part of the local society and the young people enjoying themselves.
The poem is about loneliness and isolation. A sense of distance from his own society prevents the young poet from going to the dance. But Artak New has another theory.
He said himself that he wasn't a great dancer. And all he would be doing would be at the dance and doing like a lot of young fellas at the time would be passing smart remarks. You know, that was as much part of it as anything else. But he also felt that he was now a published poet, and that meant that he was marginalised and he was that bit different, and that his comfort was in I Am King of Banks and Stones and Every Blooming Thing.
Patrick Kavanagh died in 1967, but Thomas McHugh still remembers him well.
I knew Patrick Kavanagh well. I knew him well. In fact, I worked with him at Passionville. Oh, it was easy insulting him. Very easy insulting him.
Amidst fears that the barn may be demolished, the Patrick Kavanagh Centre is seeking private funding to assist in making a bid on it.
A road, a mile of kingdom. I am king of banks and stones and every blooming thing.
The trouble with me is that many of the most exciting periods of my life have been spent far from Enniskillen. In London, Paris, Rome and New York. This place of my youth was hardly ever home to me. A worthless kingdom indeed.
The King of Banks and Stones and Every Blooming Thing. Patrick Kavanagh there speaking to RTE.
Good morning, Fran. Online gaming and technology company Xanadu is expanding its operations in Cork. It'll hire 120 new staff over the next year. Mark Brosnan is Xanadu's chief executive. He said the company, which develops software used by a number of large betting exchanges, including Matchbook.com, is seeing rapid growth in demand for its services.
We have a very good process and we can build very high quality software. And we've built a very good track record on that, and our reputation internationally in the online gaming sphere is growing. And second to that, the online gaming sector itself is growing quite dramatically, particularly with the proliferation of mobile devices and much more internet access in some of the emerging economies.
The fifth annual tourism policy workshop is taking place in Dromoulin Castle over the next 3 days with the aim of consolidating tourism's contribution to national economic recovery. Among the speakers is Professor Jim Deegan, Head of the Department of Economics and Director of the National Centre for Tourism Policy Studies at the University of Limerick. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Connor.
We're talking about consolidation here, and we've seen a big drop-off in numbers. It's starting to come back. Where can we get to, though, from here?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is that the government new policy document or draft policy document is suggesting by the year 2025 that we haven't got a numbers target, but they're suggesting that the contribution of tourism to the economy can be in the region of 5 billion euro. And just on an analysis of this, my own perspective is that I think this is maybe just a little bit far too conservative given the changes in tourism that are taking place internationally.
Why do you say conservative?
Well, I think it's interesting to reflect back on what previous targets were. In fact, that when we had a target and a policy for tourism that began called New Horizons for Irish Tourism in 2002, at that time the prediction was that the revenue from tourism would be 6 billion by 2012. Now, we all know we had an international crisis, but it seems to me that if we're making a target in 2014, for 11 years' time, and we now have a target of 5 billion for tourism in 2025, it seems as though that our ambition for the tourism sector has declined or arrested somewhat considerably.
What one thing do we need to be doing then that you think we're not doing?
I think there's two issues. One is that I think it's quite critical that we diversify away from the traditional dependence upon the British market. I think that, like, you know, it's not that we'll give up on it, but I think that the British market strategically for us should not be as important as it was heretofore. We need to look at international markets that are growing, particularly the European market, which I think that has always outperformed our expectations. And then moreover, we need to look in terms of how we prepare businesses for the new tourism environment, in fact, the environment that's already with us with big data.
And those will be the issues, among many others, I'm sure, that you'll be discussing at the conference in Dromoulin Castle. Professor Jim Deegan, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. In currencies, the euro buys $1.25.5 and 80 pence sterling this morning.
Thank you, and a very good morning from Met Aaron. Well, some mist and fog patches will affect parts of Connacht, Ulster and North Leinster for a time this morning, but wet weather in parts of the south will spread to all parts later this morning and afternoon, and this should help to clear any mist or fog. The rain is going to be heavy at times today, but it's going to be a mild day. We can expect highs of 9 to 13 degrees in a freshening southeasterly wind. And that rain will start to clear away to the east later this evening. The last of the rain will clear the east coast early tonight, and apart from a few scattered outbreaks of rain, it's going to be a largely dry night. Temperatures will fall back to between 3 and 7 degrees in light westerly winds, so some mist patches will form once again. Tomorrow Saturday is going to be a drier day, with some good sunny spells and only a light passing shower here or there. Temperatures will range from 8 to 13 degrees in light westerly winds. Saturday night is going to be dry and very cold, as temperatures fall to between plus 2 and minus 2 degrees. Winds will be light and mist and fog patches will develop, as well as a widespread frost. And now the outlook for the next few days. We can expect a cold, frosty start to Sunday, but as high pressure continues to build over the country, it's going to mean dry weather with sunny spells. A cool day though, with temperatures struggling and only ranging from 6 to 9 degrees and light winds. It's going to be another very cold night, with temperatures once again falling below freezing in many parts of the country. There's going to be a widespread sharp ground frost as temperatures dip to between plus 1 and minus 3 degrees, and once again we'll have some fog. Another cold start to Monday then, with bright spells, but cloud and rain will move into western areas later in the evening. Another cold day in store, with highs of only 5 to 9 degrees and light winds. So a quick recap for today. Rain in southern areas will spread to all parts during the day, and the rain will be occasionally heavy. We can expect a mild breezy day, with highs of 9 to 13 degrees, and that rain will finally clear away to the east early tonight. And that's the forecast. A very good morning.